watch up, fade away. Don't try to dig what we are. Not generation.
Listeners supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. That's FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Stay tuned, please, for the Doctor's Inn.
And you're losing the fight. To the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur. This all positive, that's what every single test shows. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, kid, it was something that you ate or drank, it's something that you did, and it's all in your head, it's spreading on down.
Hello, this is Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, California. And the third Thursday of each month at 6 in the evening to 7 in the evening, we do what's called The Doctor's Inn. And that's what you're listening to now, The Doctor's Inn. What I like to do is have subjects of interest, I hope, to you, the listener, relative to health and medical subjects. And normally I have a guest, or as today, I have three guests. I'll tell you in a few minutes the subject and the guests. But first, you need to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. And speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters, that's you, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and spreading the word out about arts and culture through their bi-monthly newsletters. To stay in the know about the arts or have your event listed, visit Friends of the Arts. friendsofthearts.com and stay in touch. Sorry about that. And also an underwriter is Bill Carter Realty. Bill's philosophy is to enjoy life's simple pleasures, smell the roses, be grateful, and support what you love. Bill Carter Realty, encouraging local business to support community radio. Well, today on the Doctor's Inn, we will be talking with, by phone from New York City, Marina Saplina. She's a remarkable human being, and actually, she's now one of my heroes. And we will be talking with her momentarily by phone from New York City. However, I do want you to know that we also have here in the studio two pre-med students who are Chico State students. Again, they are pre-med, and therefore they will be going to medical school after they finish their undergraduate work here at Chico State. The reason they are on the show is Marina Saplina in New York City. One of the wonderful things that I've noticed in hearing about her is that she and a colleague have done something, I believe, called Reimagine Medicine with pre-med students in New York City. What they are teaching the pre-med students has to do with the human meaning of the experiences that patients and all people go through relative to medical conditions, included chronic medical conditions. And so these two pre-med students from Chico State are here to join in the conversation today once we get Marina on the line. And these two pre-med students from Chico State are Jesse Garcia.
Hey, Dr. Logan, thank you for the invite.
Certainly, thanks for being here. And Josh Elmore.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
You betcha. Hey, before we get, we're working now to get Marina on the line, and what do you do? Well, tell the listeners, I already said that one of the reasons we are going to have you, we have you on the air with me and with Marina will be because some of what she does is work with pre-med students in New York City relative to the human nature of medicine, the humanness, and that humanity's connection and teaching them. And do you two pre-med students have anything in your experience in that nature? That is, the humanness of medicine. Do you experience anything like that in anything you do? Like, for instance, on Sunday afternoons or anything like that?
Well, hey, now that you give us
the cue.
The cue. Yeah, Josh and I are both volunteers at the Shalom Free Clinic. And I must say that at the clinic.
So you're on the, you volunteer at the what?
Shalom Free Clinic.
Shalom Free Clinic on Sunday afternoons here
Sunday
in Chico.
Yes. And I must say that at the clinic you get to see a lot of the awful things that this world does to a lot of individuals, and it's quite unfortunate. Yet the one thing I like to say and I like to think is that while you're there, you have the opportunity to see how meaningful and long-lasting, this is my go-to line, how one act of kindness can be to one individual. And when you're taking on this pre-med path, of course, science is a huge factor. Yet for us and this new generation of pre-med, it's very important for us to have the ability to make someone smile within the short amount of time you're given to take care of anybody, which I think is something lacking. Yet what is provided to Shalom Free Clinic is the opportunity to practice that and hone that and see how important that is. And hopefully eventually one day we can practice that.
God, so wonderful to hear you say that, Jesse. You're bringing a smile to my face and a tear to my eye. I'm so happy to hear you talk like that as a future physician. How about you, Josh? What do you do?
What do you do? Well, I also volunteer at the Shalom Clinic. And just to go off of what Jesse already said, or piggyback off his mentality, is, you know, communication as a future physician is huge. And I feel like people, when they come in to make an appointment with a doctor, with a future healthcare provider, that they want to be listened to. And they want to be treated like a human, and they don't want to be treated like another number or another appointment, you know, that has to be rushed out the door in 15 minutes. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I might have something on my mind that I completely forget to talk about in an appointment or a meeting.
Yeah.
And
right.
And you remember later, like, oh, I should have said that, you know. But if they don't feel listened to, or they don't feel like they're being treated like a human being, it might be hard for them to actually get everything across. You know, and then the other sense, once you prescribe something that they should be doing or give someone a recommendation, they might know what to do, but what are the likelihood that they're going to do it if they actually don't feel like they were heard, they don't feel like they were listened?
No, let's do it, and we're rushed through, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, good point. It takes time, it takes a connection, mm-hmm. that human-to-human connection.
Absolutely.
Wow, good for you. You know, the Shalom Free Clinic, just so the listeners will know, indeed is a place where on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 4 at 1010 Mangrove, Suite D, we see patients not by appointment, by walk-in, who generally are having trouble connecting with a physician or another healthcare provider because of, for one reason or another, largely it's for lack of health insurance, or they have a health insurance and they're not able to afford to use it, or they have a health insurance and they could afford to use it, but they can't get to a healthcare provider in time for whatever medical need they have. So that's what we do at the Shalom Free Clinic, and we are not by appointment, and we do, like you said, we spend time, and you guys are learning that. The clinic runs by you student volunteers. You guys run the clinic, and me as a volunteer provider, I just do that little bit of doctor work, and you guys take care of the patients. All right, we're going to take a quick, short music break, and then we'll get Marina Saplina on the line from New York City, and I'm going to introduce her momentarily after this quick music break.
If I could forget to breathe, forget to breathe entirely, it's happened down through history. And surely I could lose my head. Some night I could drink too much and take it off and just forget. And I will learn all languages of speaking every tongue, and return all that time manages to steal from everyone. Someday I will paint the sky, I will build
Hello, this is Dr. Kenneth Logan again. I want to, while we're getting Marina on the line, I'm going to introduce her. Marina Saplina is in New York City. She's a young woman who is an interdisciplinary artist working in the field of medical and health humanities and socially engaged art. She is an associate of the Trent Center for Bioethics, Humanities, and History of Medicine at Duke University, where she serves as the lead artist for something called Reimagine Medicine, something we're going to talk to her and ask her about, and as founder of the BETES, B-E-T-E-S organization, which is a diabetes organization. She also developed a theatrical shows and workshops that engaged patient communities and medical education on the lived experiences of chronic illness. And she's also a CNIL, I don't know how to pronounce that, scholar in medical humanities at Penn State College of Medicine from 2016 to 2018. Marina, can you hear us? Can you hear me on the line?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for that warm introduction. I'm so glad to be here.
And actually, I'm not quite finished with your introduction. Can I do just a little bit more?
Sure.
Okay, her artistic and scholarly research focuses on how chronic illness creates fractured embodiment and creation of the medical object of disease, and how puppetry, is uniquely positioned to investigate the poetic and historic body in illness and healthcare. As a patient activist, she has lived with type 1 diabetes since age 2. She is part of a movement called Insulin for All, for insulin pricing transparency and a shifting of power in the fight for affordable medicines in the United States. Not just insulin, but other medicines in the United States. She has got an enormous amount on her plate and what she does. Hello, Marina. Thank you for being with us.
Hello, Ken. It's such a pleasure.
Excellent. So you and I have briefly talked before the show a few days ago. And there's so much that I want you to tell us about. Before we get into that, I want to say that you are on the East Coast, obviously, New York City. We are on the West Coast. And I'm hoping that what we hear from you will help empower us to also move forward in the subject matter that you are going to tell us about, that you are working on. So you're going to empower us today. Thank you.
Well, it's not such a big country, I think, you guys. I think we're closer than we think.
I hear you. If you, I know there are, I have on this sheet of paper, I'm looking at a few things that I would like to hear more about. And I want you to know, I'm not sure if you heard the beginning of the show, that we have two pre-med students from California State University Chico here in the studio on the line, on a microphone each as well, Jesse Garcia and Josh Elmore.
Hello.
Hi, Marina.
And the reason I wanted them on there because of the first subject that I hope we could talk about, that you can talk about, and that is, I know that you and what I read on the line was you and a coworker have worked with pre-med students and maybe still do. In the area of the humanness, I don't know how, I would love to know how you say it, but and maybe this is what reimagine medicine is about, but tell us.
Sure. So the program came about through a collaboration with Dr. Raymond Barfield, who is a pediatric oncologist. And we met when I was an invited artist to Duke, and just really got to speaking and realized that we had a lot of kinship about the role of the imagination in clinical encounters, in the process of healing, and also just how do we imagine bodies and human beings to be. And so we formed a summer fellowship that we do hope will continue growing. The one line description of it is that it helps to form the strength of character, philosophical foundations, and imagination needed to work in context of human suffering, illness, and death. But it also asks kind of fundamental questions about what is the experience of illness about, and what does one encounter in that space when really we're at the height of our fragility?
During an illness or during a condition or whatever, when you're at the height of your fragility,
it's really been an exploration and a journey, because the sort of the reality at the moment, which we are actively working to transform, is that even still so much of pre-med pre-medical education and pre-health education is really very deeply rooted in the sciences.
Hello. I totally know what you mean.
Right. Well, I'm sure you do.
And would you two, pre-meds, Jesse and Josh, would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not, that's incredibly important. So I'm not at all.
Yes.
I'm not pushing that away by any
right.
means. But when you encounter a person in your clinical office, you're not encountering a lab.
Right.
No kidding. You're encountering the human being grappling with all aspects of their selves. And so there are different knowledge traditions and different practices that must meet and be interwoven into the pedagogy of medicine.
Absolutely.
And those are really held in the arts and humanities. So that's what the Reimagine Medicine is about.
Absolutely. They're very good. And these are pre-med students. And you said the word a summer fellowship, I think, is what you said. Is that true? Marina, can you hear me?
Hello?
Marina, can you hear me?
Yes, now. My time?
We're going in and out. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
So you and the pediatric oncologist established this summer fellowship for pre-med students, and in working with them, acknowledging the experientialness that goes into the experience of a variety of chronic medical conditions. Is that kind of what you're telling me?
Yes. So it wasn't focused specifically on chronic health conditions.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think chronicity is, I think you could speak to this better than I could speak of it through a personal lived experience, but that
well,
chronicity is really the space that care is so deeply.
I'd love to hear you interject any personal piece to any of this, by the way, if you dared to. Yes. So I just think, and a fellowship for pre-med students. Interesting. Okay, that was great. Don't you and I agree, do you and I agree that this should be part of every medical student or pre-med student's education all the way along?
100%.
Yeah.
All the way through med school into the fifth year into residency. So
absolutely.
It's really interwoven alongside along scientific practice and inquiry.
Absolutely. Hey, Josh and Jesse, do you think it? Tell Marina and I if you think it's important to have not only the science of what you're learning, but also the humanity of the human interaction. Is that important to you or not important to you?
I'd say so, yes.
Yeah, I would definitely say that communication and that is huge with pre-med students.
Go ahead, Jesse.
I'd like to add, science is one thing, and it's definitely a crucial component of being a good doctor, good physician, anything in the pre-med field. But I do believe that the second part of that, the other half, is being a human and being able to interact with humans effectively and efficiently and kindly without any outside judgment.
I'm going to give, you can't do this, but I'm going to give these gentlemen a high five.
and I'm just, giving it virtually across the
room. All right, you got a virtual high five for Marina as well. I'm so glad to hear that we're all on the same page relative to that. And so, I was just curious, just as part of this, the students, the pre-med students that you do work with relative to the Reimagine Medicine, are they, I know you're affiliated with Duke, you work at Duke University, and you have been at Penn State in the past. Are these students likely students there or other places as well?
The fellowship so far has been with students at Duke.
Uh-huh.
Last summer, I had a pre-med and public health assistant from UNC, University of North Carolina. So far, it's been at Duke. So we absolutely we hope to bring the programming that we're developing to schools across the country.
Spread it out. Excellent. Hey, that's funny. I just had a flash of the three schools that I got got interviewed for medical school, Duke was one of them. They didn't accept me. They were the other two did, but that one didn't. That was funny.
They're lost.
Yeah. Wow. Excellent. Go ahead, Maria.
I wanted to respond, you know, that I think that I want to say yes and to the, I believe, is it Jesse? Jesse said, mm-hmm. you know, the humanist and always keeping that at the center. And so part of that work is to understand the lived experience. It's to understand that we actually, each of us sit in different histories. Mm-hmm. And that the political forces on our bodies, are not the same. And that, that is part of, coming to really grasp what it is to be a human being. And to also acknowledge that there are real differences and gaps, that sometimes really cannot be bridged. That's why, historic embodiment, is really important, for that work.
Tell us what that means.
Because you can't glaze over, and pretend that everyone's in the same space, because they're not.
Everyone is not in the same state. Historic embodiment. Expand on that terminology, please.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I could set it that way. What does that mean? Yes. Historic embodiment. I want to know.
Well, I mean, let me flip it back to you. Mm-hmm. When you hear the word embodiment, what do you think of?
Yeah, embodiment.
What wakes up for you?
Wow. Just kind of the package or the possibly the individual is made up of, as an individual. It's actually not a word that I tend to use, but that's what comes to my mind.
Absolutely, and kind of which connects back to the same conversation of, that through the scientist that gaze, you really come to learn the biological, chemical substance of what humans are made up of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But there's also...
Not the embodiment.
Right, that's more like body mechanics.
Right, right.
But we want to restore a more complete... human in the practice of medicine, and to train not only mechanically, right?
Yeah.
So there's all of these other layers of what a person, what it means to be a human being.
Totally agree, and I think I totally agree, and I think I just wish what you are doing to be part of all of our medical school and pre-medical school education. It's obvious to me in practice all along that I deal a lot in diabetes in my practice. But nonetheless, what I say to people is we're all individuals. Even everybody, no matter what the medical condition that I'm helping them with, they're all individuals. We are all individuals. So it's kind of in that realm of individualistness that you're speaking to, but I will admit I'm not in. I'm learning from you. You're helping empower me, and I hope Jesse and Josh and the listeners, relative to us being more tuned to that humanness and individualness of each patient. Wow. Hey, I have a quick question for you, Marina. There's many more things I want to talk to you about, but I know you do puppeteer. You are a puppeteer. You do puppet work. And tell us how that fits into your communication with humans, and how do you use that in communicating and helping human beings?
Sure.
Where does that fit?
Yes, I'm a puppetry artist. And what's so beautiful, okay, so one, I have to say that puppetry, typically when you say that in the United States, people think of the Muppets, which are fantastic and beautiful, but actually the form is a lot bigger than only the Muppets. A Muppet is one kind of puppet.
Okay.
So gotcha. That's the first thing I think we have to say.
Uh-huh.
What puppetry really is an incredible training of the imagination.
Mm.
Because to animate the puppet, you have to imagine the world of the puppet and play it.
Mm. A role.
And that what's that?
Yeah, you got the puppet role. But
that role is the world that this being is within. And it's a very specific training of the imagination to imagine what that world is. And to render that imagination believable through the puppet, even if the world is imaginary,
mm-hmm.
right? And what that act of animating does through the imagination is it also connects to your own story and body and history and your own emotional and psychological states of being. And so it really has the capacity to open up a lot of discoveries that you might never really foresee. So what I'm really fascinated by is the process of animating and actually how much it can serve clinicians to build the muscle of their imagination. And to also, for them to become more cognizant of the different worlds that they are encountering, right? And here, can please step in because you are the clinician.
Right.
I really am speaking as a patient and one who's shadowed and and spend time in medical education spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if that resonates with you.
Yes, that, what a great idea. And what I'm thinking of what I'm wondering is, how do you specifically use the puppeteering relative to what you're saying? In other words, do you have clinicians? Do you have patients? Do you have pre-meds? Do you have who? Or is it you yourself with doing the puppeteering? Or do you bring in? How does that work?
How
is it utilized?
Show us behind the curtain. What happens?
Yeah, right.
Well, in Reimagined Medicine, the strand that I lead is called Embodiment and Puppetry.
Mm-hmm.
And their students are taken through the process, pre-medical students, of different exercises where they are introduced and practice and build the capacity to animate and puppeteer.
Wow.
Always being aware that the point is not becoming a puppeteer,
right.
Or becoming a performer. That's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
But that there's a translation of capacity. I mean, something that I've been really caught by as I reflect on this past summer is how differently different students handle the object itself of the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And how actually in the way that different students touch this puppet.
Huh. Even the physicalness of it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
In the differences of touch, a lot is revealed.
Interesting.
And so, which also connects to a very practical skill of handling bodies.
A patient. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gosh, it makes me, it's a kind of an opening up of the, of a mind, or of a, say a pre-med or a doctor to the other, to another. in various layers, I would think. Interesting. Wow. Hmm. So Jesse and Josh, we're gonna have to break in. We're gonna have to study in how to utilize puppeteering. So be thinking on this, okay, guys.
You're gonna have to call me in.
Yeah. What a great idea. And so indeed, are you working with pre-meds at times with this type of work? I mean, the puppeteering-ness? Is it pre-meds?
Yes.
Oh, wow. What a trip. Huh. Interesting.
I have to say, like most, you know, well, the students, I mean, you know, and probably I think you guys would relate similarly coming from neuroscience and biology to puppetry, right? So there's very often a what is happening effect. But then we move through that. And that on its own is a valuable experience.
No kidding. I mean, it just seems like a very useful tool. And when I put it this way, the way you have, and I hope that my son, who's just started his third year in medical school, I hope he's listening to this show. I want to get his feedback on this. I would love to hear his opinion on this, his feedback. So, Chris, tell me all about this, your ideas on this when we talk next. Hey, I wanted to... I want to get, you know, type 1 diabetes happens to be an issue of interest mm-hmm. in mine, of me, that I have. And so I do want to get to that in a minute. But before we do, I want to give you, Marina, a high five right now on an article I read. I pulled up from my email. I was emailed this in 2016. I was on some email list relative to an article you wrote in 2016. And the title of the article was "Four: Basic Healthcare Models, Analysis of U.S. Healthcare System." And you and I talked a little bit over the phone or by email about the issue of lack of the holes or voids in our current healthcare system relative to access to care because of our broken health insurance aspect of our healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And we really have this. And you went on in this article to kind of illustrate a patchwork of... that is present in our healthcare, and I just thought, well, this is very interesting. I just want to say this. So you looked at this patchwork relative to health insurance coverage, and one was our veterans in our society in the United States have healthcare available to them, similar to how people in Britain or Cuba have healthcare available to them. So our veterans are cared for in that realm, that ability. And then our citizens 65 years or older on Medicare are treated similar to all humans in Canada, that is, where they have actually even call it Medicare up there. In other words, all citizens in Canada have healthcare insurance, period. And that's similar to our 65 years and older, which I am, and I'm on Medicare. So I thought that was an interesting how that is alike, how that is in Canada. And then our working citizens in the United States who have a job that supplies or facilitates healthcare insurance is similar to how healthcare is in Germany with their healthcare insurances system. That leaves 15% of our population without healthcare, and how that where that is like in the world is like in Cambodia, or how you said in Cambodia or rural India, where you don't get medical care until you're sick or dying, and then you're going to a hospital or a public hospital or an emergency room somewhere to on your last breath. And that's how the 15% or more of people in our country are with healthcare, with lack of healthcare insurance or insurance they can't afford to use. they don't get preventative care. They don't get regular care. They wait until the disaster is hit before they end up in the emergency room, unfortunately. And I was just, I'm just giving you a high five and saying what a great article you wrote. And I totally hear you.
I have to say, I'm really glad that you have summarized and broadcast that to your audience.
Oh, good.
To burst the bubble to say that I did not write that article.
Oh, you didn't write that article? My bad.
I know exactly which article you're referring to, and yes, it is excellent.
Oh, maybe. Maybe, you know what it might have been? Is that you put this article out. You didn't write it, but you put it out in email to various people in 2016.
I think so. I believe it was written by Steffi Wohlhandler, who is with Physicians for a National Health Program.
Yeah, PNHP.
Yeah. I mean, what do we have in America? We have a mess. We don't have a health care system. I've actually dropped the word care from this health system because I don't think this is a system of cruelty. It's not of care.
Oh, good point.
And I have really stopped dancing around the crisis that this health system is in, and that there are solutions. We just need to look abroad and understand that healthcare is a human right.
There you go.
And that it's completely unacceptable that we are not covered from womb to tomb.
Womb to tomb. Birth to death coverage.
Yes.
It's embarrassing.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's
a
moral failure of this nation.
Totally. And we could Paul O'Rourke Babb, who's on the controls right now, who's and I are part of Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP.
Oh, fantastic.
Paul is distinctly a member and active member.
So I was just up in the rally. You know, we just had a rally in Albany where all the private insurers had their annual conference. There's a father who, in New York, his son missed a $20 payment to Fidelis Care.
Mm.
They denied his anti-depression medicine, and his son drove his truck into the river and took his own life.
Wow.
Over a $20 payment.
Wow. Paul had heard about that, too. He's just acknowledging this. Information you just said. Well, you know, it's hideous. You know, Jesse, Josh, sitting here with me today, you know, we do this free clinic in town on Sunday afternoons, and we see each time we have the clinic, we see people who are living their life without health care and then finally get into the clinic. I could tell you some stories. I could tell you a couple gross stories, but I won't. But nonetheless, right here in our own town, obviously, because every piece of America we have holes. Like you said, it's a health cruelty system, not health care system. I totally agree with you. And it's just as simple as booting out. Here's the move: boot out the for-profit healthcare insurance companies, health insurance companies, out of the system, and put us on healthcare for all, and not be our lives be run and our healthcare system be run by for-profit health insurance companies. Bad thing.
Yeah. And it's just profit has no place in healthcare.
Totally.
It is. How do we? I keep thinking that it is the same moral failure that this country keeps making, reincarnating across systems. Our bodies are not for profit.
Yeah. Totally.
That's it.
Absolutely.
You know, and yet the sin that's like embedded into the DNA of this nation just keeps reincarnating.
Yeah, it is embedded in the DNA, and it's been going on for so long, and people, I don't know, I personally feel like the for-profit health insurance companies are the root of the misinformation to the populace relative to how a change would be important.
Them and pharma. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is is a bigger financial player. You know, there are 1.5 lobbyists for every single member of Congress. Pharma lobbyists.
Oh my God. More than there are Congress people. Wow, there are lobbyists from the pharmaceutical industry. Wow, and that's a lot.
There are 1.5 pharmaceutical lobbyists for every single member of Congress.
Yeah. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, but you know who there's a whole lot more of?
Humans. Citizens.
Yeah.
Right on. Right on. Hey, and I know that that morphs into the work that you've done in voicing over the internet, I've noticed, issues related to the cost of insulin, and that may be near and dear to your heart because you have type 1 diabetes. Do you mind me saying that, by the way?
Not at all.
You have type 1 diabetes. And I don't know if you listeners know this, but type 1 diabetes means that the person does not, their pancreas does not make insulin. They need to have insulin shots or insulin on a pump or some insulin injectingness to them, or they are not able to live. They die without insulin. And yet pharmaceutical companies that make insulin have ratcheted up their cost of a bottle of insulin. I don't know if it's 300% over the last 5-6 years.
It's 1,200% since 1996.
Say that again. Let me preface this. The pharmaceutical industry, the three companies that make insulin for the United States, have raised the cost of insulin. How much?
1,200%.
1,200% since 1996?
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
There is no reason for that. And I will just tell you that there is no reason except profit. You know, I could go on and on about this subject, but the problem, I mean, that would be nice if it was for, I don't know, cream to make somebody's face look pretty, or, I don't know, Viagra or something, but it's not. It's life and death. It's like it's medical blackmail. It makes me want to go on to another subject. That's what it does.
Well, I think what I have to say about the Insulin for All movement is that it's really a patient driven movement. Which is really the only way that the HIV movement was patient-driven.
Oh, right.
And us who carry the pain of this cruelty and who see and witness daily people posting on social media of how they are rationing, how they can't afford their insulin. I just gave 2 vials of insulin to somebody who was up in Albany because he was rationing. He had a gap in coverage in his health care. He can't afford his insulin. So we see it every day. And the thing is, we don't actually fully know the consequences, the real consequences of this, because there are 12 families who have given T1 International, which is an organization that doesn't accept any pharmaceutical funding, and really is a leader in the insulin pricing fight. Hmm. And 12 families gave permission for the names of their sons, daughters, sisters, and brothers, and family members to be publicly used.
Because
the stories of those who have rationed and died.
And rationed insulin and therefore not had enough insulin and died. 12 families have allowed their family members' names to be used in that struggle. Oh, wow.
But the thing is, the impact of rationing will show up years down the line.
Right.
You know, for the first time in decades, complication rates have again began to climb.
Mm.
Amputation rates have
That's an interesting point. I don't know if listeners hear this again. So over the years, you know, as we've been trying to work with people with diabetes to try to get their blood sugars as close to normal as possible, with the goal being to decrease the likelihood for complications later in their life from diabetes. And what Marina is saying is that has, with that move to do that, help people normalize their blood sugars, the complication rate went down. Now the price of insulin has gone up over the last few years, and now Marina is telling us now the complication rates are starting to rise again. Hello. Oh, my God. Huh.
Yeah. And I actually have to say that I think I think we really need doctors and medical students to be organizing, you know, the way PNHP is, the way that, what is it, the American Medical Student Association?
Oh, yeah.
They're really active. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, because we need both patients and clinicians to just say, no.
Enough's enough.
This shall not go forward.
Yeah.
This system cannot stand.
Yeah.
We cannot do our jobs as clinicians.
Right. Right. I totally agree with you that, and I will say that you would think what you just said makes sense to me as far as, for instance, physicians in the country, United States, to join voices together as in unison against. For instance, pharmaceutical industry doing this this 1,200% rise in insulin cost, for instance, to the public, joined, for instance, such as the American Medical Association. Why is not the American Medical Association sitting at the steps of doing a sit-in on the steps of these three pharmaceutical companies' main offices in wherever they are. So any, if there are anybody, any people who are members of, I actually don't no longer belong to that organization because I felt it was pointless. But nonetheless,
they finally left the industry group that they were a part of.
That's, yeah, oh boy, big move. Well, thank you, but big move.
Yeah. Radical.
Not big enough. Absolutely. It's embarrassing as a physician. It really is. While we're on the subject of diabetes, I've heard the term Josh and Jesse. So what question do you want to ask Marina about what we've talked about so far? Here I am taking all your time away. Anything off the top of your head? Go ahead.
I would just say, what's your structure for teaching pre-med students the humanitarian aspect of being a doctor and the you know, the being on one level with each patient that they see?
I will be honest. To really answer your question, I would say, come join me in a course. but the structure is fundamentally experiential. I lead you through different exercises and experiential, what I call artistic research, where we ask questions and create scenarios and process and reflect on what we encounter in the classroom. I also introduce different medical humanities readings, readings from disability studies, as a way to provide framing and some theoretical foundations to the work as well. It's really a building of a skill set over time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sort of the most I can share. And it ends in students create their own puppet body parts that are then combined into puppets together.
Oh, wow.
And then exercises are created through that. So there's an arc to the journey, but it really is a journey. And primarily one that you can't run away from because it's a fundamentally experiential process.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. It seems almost like you're using the puppets to get the, you know, the to-be doctors, you know, kind of taking themselves out of the equation and just focusing on the patient and trying to understand and listen and see where they're coming from. Like when you said that you
they try to get inside the puppet's own world. Is that right?
It is, except what's actually interesting is that we keep the focus very much on the student's body.
Wow. Okay.
Because your body is part of the clinical encounter.
Mm.
It's two bodies in that room, at least, right? It's very common. That aspect of it is deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a process of creating trust in the classroom and the capacity to take risks.
Wow.
And reflecting on where do you want to and don't want to go, you know? And so it's a real negotiation, and every group of students is very different. Different dynamics, different people, different histories, different stories. So,
that's amazing. Yeah.
And so what we want you to do is come out here and in California, Chico, California, and teach that and do that teaching. So move out here, okay? Well, temporarily. Come out here and do that. Hey, can I ask you, Marina, how do you pronounce your last name?
Yes. Saplina.
Saplina. Okay. Saplina. We're going to wind down now a little bit. Do you... we have been talking to you about many aspects of your life and what you've... it sounds like you have passion about and are how you're working with students, et cetera, and the diabetes and the insulin, and et cetera. We've heard so much, and there's so much more to talk to you about. I am wondering... if there was a listener who wanted to interact with you, is there, for instance, a email address that they could utilize?
Absolutely. The easiest one is mp, like Tom, 315 at duke.edu. And so, I would love to hear from...
So say that one more time, if you would, please.
Mm-hmm. M like mom, P like Tom, 315 at duke.edu.
.edu, yeah, I wrote it down. All right, so MT 315 at duke.edu. That's your email, an email address for you.
You know, Ken, the way you said it, it almost sounded like a poem.
Very good. I wanted to talk to you about things that I don't have time to now. So maybe in the future, on again. I thank you so much, Marina Saplina. Did I say it right?
That was perfect.
Thank you so much for what you're doing in the world of humanities and medicine, and in the world of diabetes care, diabetes care out in New York City, and thank you for the empowerment for us to do our best to do like you are doing out here in the West Coast. Thank you so much. Jesse and Josh?
I just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing all your stories and sharing your insight.
Yeah, me as well. We really appreciate it, and I believe it's up to the new generation, us doctors here, or us pre-meds here, to follow in your footsteps and make this country the place it should be.
Mm.
Marina, I want you to know you've had an impact on these two pre-meds.
Yeah, thank
Love
you.
It. I'll take all of us.
There you go. Right on.
We carry the mantle together. This has been such a pleasure, Ken. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
So, that was wonderful to talk with this hero of mine, this wonderful individual that she is. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Explore Butte County. Created in 2015, Explore Butte County is committed to increasing the visibility of our county's amazing natural beauty, landmarks, events, cultural activities and restaurants. ExploreButteCounty.com is the one resource for information about countywide attractions, outdoor adventures, day trips, food, drink, lodging, hospitality, farms, and more. If you have friends or family coming to visit, or if you are looking for new adventure, check out ExploreButteCounty.com. There's more to explore in ButteCounty.com. And by C&